everyone, and welcome to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the original Lifestyle CEO, and you have arrived at the show where we empower you to break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. I hope you guys had a great holiday weekend. Of course, it's Monday, April 17th. Yesterday was Easter, and we also celebrated the Passover last week. For those of you who celebrate, I hope you had a good time. We had fabulous weather over the weekend here in the Washington, D.C. area, and today we're paying for a little bit with the temperature having dropped about 20 degrees, and it's overcast and rainy and just generally yucky. But that's okay because we got a great weekend, and it doesn't matter because we are here and we are ready to take our businesses to the next level no matter what the weather is. And today I've got a great guy who is going to help us do that. I'd like to welcome to the show today Jim McCaffrey. He is the President and Chief Operating Officer of Sand Hill Advisors, a California-based wealth management firm. And Jim has a host of experiences, and he brings a lot of background to the table to help businesses take their profitability levels to a whole nother degree. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate that very much.
Well, sure. It's really great to have you. And Jim, you have a background in a variety of things. You've run, you've helped as the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, and the Chief Operating Officer of several companies, and you also have an emphasis on in the financial services industry and also professional management. So you bring a whole panoply of experiences and expertise, and we're really excited to have you today so we can pick your brain for the next 60 minutes or so.
Great. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks, Donna.
We really are excited to have you share with us some of your philosophies and your ideas and experiences on taking a small business from the idea of having the owner actually run the business to having the things in place that need to be in place to grow the business. So can you start by just sharing what your paradigm is and how you think of those two things and how a small business can go from the running level to the growing level?
Sure. Absolutely. I typically think of it, Donna, in the case of you're going from a practice model to a business model.
Okay.
So typically, you see small businesses start out as a practice. It could be one or two individuals, and each one of the individuals do various things to help support the practice. The practice grows, and over time, it hopefully becomes profitable and grows. At some point, the practice model no longer works. You know, the founder can no longer be the CEO, the chief financial officer, head of human resources, the chief operating officer, the CFO, and so on, running facilities. He can't do that effectively and continue to grow profitably. So at some point, there becomes some critical point in the growth cycle that you're going to have to move from a practice model to a business model. That's
so
right.
Are you, in other words, saying that for businesses where there's one person who's, quote-unquote, the chief cook and bottle washer,
right,
that in order for growth to take place, at some point they have to scale back on the hands-on treatment that they're giving to the business?
Absolutely. I think at some point you can't be effective at doing all those things and grow profitably. It just breaks down. It just doesn't work.
Now, how do you know when to make a change? I mean, is there a formula or I know every business is different, but most of the listeners to the Lifestyle CEO Show are the chief cook and bottle washers, or they're actually at the point that you're describing where they're like, okay, wait a minute, I've got to do something a little bit differently here if I want to continue to make a profit and also, you know, get some sleep.
Well, there's really typically no formula, Donna, but really what you end up seeing is you see an erosion of profitability. So as you begin to grow, you are profitable, you see nice profit margins, and at some point along the way, all of a sudden your profit margins are eroding and your expenses are increasing. You kind of go, you scratch your head and go, what's going on here? And that's typically the point where you begin to find out that, hey, I'm not effective at what I'm doing right now. My profit margins are stalling and they're actually eroding some. So for each different business or practice, it happens at different points. But, you know, in our firm, in our case, it was once we had about $1 billion of assets under management, it really began to show up that now we really need to move over to a business model. So it's different for all firms and all practices, but typically what you'll see is an erosion of profitability.
So at some point, you're doing everything the same way you've always done it, but the profit level just kind of either levels off or starts to decline.
Exactly. And then you have to sit back and say, okay, am I, as the CEO, am I being effective in my day-to-day role, or am I spending too much time running the facilities, or I've hired some people now, I've got HR issues, and I'm spending time on that, as opposed to building the business.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading a book this morning, and one of the author was talking about that, and one of the things he said was he hears a lot of business owners say, oh, you know, I'm too busy running my business to make any money.
That's exactly right. Again, that's what you'll see at some point. I'm doing too many of the day-to-day operational things to be effective in what I'm doing. And frankly, what you find out is that the CEOs or the founders of these businesses, eventually they realize they're not good at doing that.
Can't be good at everything.
Exactly. And at that point, you say, okay, now what I need to do is, what is my strategy? What are the things I want to pursue that I'm really good at? And then figure out how to get some professional management to come in and kind of take over those other day-to-day roles that you really aren't good at. You were good at in the early stages, but after some point in time, you just can't do it effectively.
Okay, so let's say someone is at that stage, and again, I know we have to talk in generalities, but is one of the things they can look at contracting out some of those duties so that they have more time to focus on growth strategies?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think outsourcing is a good idea, particularly in the early stages. You know, hiring and maintaining employees is a very expensive proposition, so I think you can ease your way into that with outsourcing a number of things, particularly in HR, for example, and you can also outsource some of the technology and things of that nature. And then, you know, kind of can take baby steps, if you will, and then bring on the people as you see your strategy start to unfold.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Again, most of the listeners to the show are businesses that are run by one, maybe two people. And so one of the things you mentioned that probably, I know, hits home with a lot of us is outsourcing the technology.
Right, absolutely.
And there's there's an endless number of ways to do that, right? I mean, you can, if you have an online based business, you can outsource, the purchasing of online ads. Or if you have a membership-based organization, you can outsource maintaining your member database. I mean, is there just like an endless number of ways that you can use technology effectively and efficiently and just outsource that part so you don't have to do it anymore? Even a customer database if you sell products.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, that's the huge wave in industries today is outsourcing, particularly the technology. It's a lot more cost-effective and a lot more efficient. You know, you're getting the experts, and when you're outsourcing, they typically have a large base of clients, so they have scale, which as a business owner you don't have yet, so you can leverage off of their scale, and typically it's much more cost-effective.
So they can have, for example, really sophisticated technology that costs millions of dollars, which obviously a small business owner probably can't afford, but because they have so many customers, they can charge you a small fee to give you the same benefits over a period of time.
Well said. That's exactly right.
So how do you, I mean, there's so many companies out there offering these kinds of services. Jim, can you offer any tips to people about how to choose? I mean, I'm getting spammed all the time by somebody offering a new way to do this or a new way to do that. Do you know some of the things you can advise a small business to take a look at when they're choosing that? Should they choose a person that's a vendor that's been in business for a certain amount of time? Or what kinds of things can we look for?
Well, you do want to have a vendor that's been in business for a period of time. You see a lot of sort of software developers and technology companies that are, you know, brand new, and they're here today and gone tomorrow, and you don't want to be left holding the bag.
Yeah.
So you do want to look for, you know, solid companies, and you should look for opportunities within your community to network with other small business owners. There has to be some forums or someplace where you can, you know, sort of share and ask the question, hey, is there anybody out here that's using a technology vendor that, you know, you've had great success with, I'd like to know more about, and really kind of begin to network within your own community, because there'll be other business owners like yourself out there that have outsourced into the technology environment that you can go out and ask them the questions and, you know, kind of get more guidance.
Right. Okay, so things like joining a trade organization or maybe even an online discussion group in your industry, you can get that kind of information.
Absolutely. There's user groups in communities all over that you can get lots of great information.
And have you noticed that some of these technology companies also have user groups, as you describe them, at their websites? Like they have discussion groups or blogs or some other kind of mechanism that allows you to interact with other purchasers and get tips from them on how to use their software or whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's really good. So technology is one of the ways that we can do it. And in terms of engaging actual service providers, maybe not in the technological area, like if you're in manufacturing, for example, are there different kinds of ways that a company can do that?
Well, sure. I mean, again, it's all, you kind of start out, what's your model? What are the things I need? What are the things that I'm really good at? And what are the things I'm not good at? And then those are your outsource opportunities. And then, again, I think you go back into your communities, into the networks, and say, okay, I need, a part-time CFO, if you will, or somebody that, a contractor that can fill that particular requirement for me. I need to delegate some of my HR elements out. So, where in the community are those experts that I can tap into? So, again, I think you've got to think across the spectrum of what your business is and what your needs are. And, again, I come back to saying, okay, I'm going to outsource the things I'm not really good at, and I'm going to keep in-house all the things I'm great at and focus on that.
And to find these kinds of people, my goodness, I guess there must be a million ways to do that. I guess you can do everything from post an ad on an online job site, job website search engine, or what other kinds of ways can you use to find these kinds of people? Because, again, if you're a small business owner, it's not like you're posting a job for, a huge technology company like Microsoft or something, where
right.
people are going to immediately click on you and go, ooh, I want to work there.
Right. I think there's so many people that, again, I think it's just from you talked about some of lifestyle change that have been in corporate business for years and years and years, but now they only want to work part-time, and so they make themselves available to do these types of things. And, you can find them. You just have to reach out into your community and just begin with, the typical notion of networking. Talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to people that are in your business. Talk to people that you see are successful. What's made them successful? And talk to them about that. You will get the contacts, and it just one leads to the other, and you just keep pursuing it, following it, doing your research and your homework, and you wind up with some good contractors to help you out.
Okay, that's great information. We're going to take our first break, and we're going to come back in a minute or so and talk with Jim more about that. Plus, we're going to get his four-prong approach to profitability for businesses. I want you guys to know that you can call your questions or comments into Jim at 800-773-0355. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show. We're here talking today with Jim McCaffrey of Sand Hill Advisors, a profitability company that helps businesses maximize their profitability. And before we took our break, Jim, we were talking about engaging the services of contractors or outsourcing certain management functions associated with your business. And I want to ask you, how do you find these people, and how do you know how much to pay them? Is there kind of a formula or anything that you can use to figure out how much their services are worth?
Well, you can, actually. You can go, you can just, using the Google search engine, if you will, and I hate not to plug them, but you can go and find, top-rated independent HR firms, and they'll post up data on their website, and they frankly provide all this for free, that says, and they do it by region, city, town, so on, locales, and say, okay, for a a general manager in Sacramento, California, the salary ranges are between $150,000 and $200,000 based on this amount of experience. And that gives you sort of a rough idea that if you had to hire somebody and you were in Sacramento, this is about what it would cost you. On top of that, you would have to pay benefits and so on. So you're probably more, if you chose 150, it'd be more like 200 when you're done. And then you say, okay, well, rather than hire the individual, I'm going to outsource this, and typically you probably find somebody for quite a bit less than that.
Yeah, it's funny you said you're not going to plug Google. It's kind of hard not to plug Google when you need to find something. But for those of you listening out there, I just went to a well-known search engine, and I put in HR firm salary range, and I came back with a lot of free salary reports. So that's really great. So we'll have to at some point start this for moms who are looking for a lifestyle change, or people even who are retiring and looking for a second career. Is that a good place for small businesses to go to get this kind of help?
Absolutely. You know, Donna, people are living longer. You're the baby boomers now. They're going to be wanting to work well past 55 years of age. And these individuals, you know, they may have been former presidents, CEOs of companies that, hey, they just really don't want to give up quite yet. And they would like to have an opportunity to work a few hours, you know, 20 hours a week or 10 hours a week. And they have tremendous experience that they can bring to the small business owner, tremendous experience that, you know, it's very hard to find and buy. But, you know, you're going to see a lot more of that. That's the trend you'll see going forward.
Yeah, and I would imagine if it's not like hands-on work, like product manufacturing, that you could actually get somebody, doesn't even matter where they're located, and they can do some of the back office, back-end functions of your business to help it run smoothly.
Absolutely, or you just want to have a thought partner. You know, I want to build my strategy. You know, again, as I'd say, you typically when you go from a practice, you don't necessarily have a strategic plan. But as you go into the business model, you're going to need that strategic plan. And if you don't have experience of building one, there's where you get real benefit from people that have been around and have had many years of developing strategic plans.
Right, right. Well, I know that you have, speaking of building a strategic plan, which should always include trying to maintain profitability, I guess, you have a four-prong approach to addressing that issue. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I sure can, Donna. And again, I'm focusing on the angle from our firm, but you can take these tenets and apply them in any business that you happen to be in.
Okay.
Really, there's really four areas, and I'm going to say them out, and we can talk about any one particular area. But the first thing is you want to pursue ideal opportunities only. And by that, I mean you can't be all things to all people. So what are you really good at, and focus on that. Don't try to be things that you're not great at, because ultimately you'll be unprofitable. Structure your firm around your strategy. So once you decide on what your ideal opportunities are, and what your strategy is, then build your firm around that strategy. Third, institutionalize your business processes. What I find in many small businesses that the things that should be institutionalized, by that I mean they should be predictable, non-variable, routine, and automated, that a lot of the small business owners are doing them on a manual basis and doing them different each time. And that, over time, will not work. You need to institutionalize your business processes. And then I think what's really important, and some of the things that we'll see that we talked about a little bit earlier, is you've got to delegate to maximize effectiveness. Again, pointing out that if you're this cook bottle washer, you cannot be effective with that over the longer haul.
Okay, now these are absolutely fantastic, because as you said, no matter what the size of your business, from startup to really huge, and no matter what industry you're in, these seem to be some really sort of the touchstone of any kind of business.
Yeah, absolutely, it's the foundation.
So let's talk about each one of them individually. Pursuing ideal opportunities. I know. Again, every business is going to be different, but is that like a mindset? You know, how do you program yourself? Let's say you're a small business owner, and you manufacture and sell a certain product, and it's a really good quality product, and you sell it throughout the United States, maybe on your website. And then, you know, as opportunities come up, you I guess, have to make a determination about whether they're ideal or not. What goes into that?
Well, I think it's, again, back to what you do really well versus what you don't do well. So in other words, what I'm thinking about, again, I'll kind of take it from our perspective, is that, you know, a certain client fits the profile for us, and we want to pursue that client sort of attributes only, as opposed to trying to bring in other clients that can, you know, basically will bring revenue, but they don't fit our model, and ultimately we can't serve them well. They have a bad experience, and it ends up being an unprofitable business for us. It's always tempting to grow your business by taking any and all opportunities. You've got to have the discipline that says, I'm only going to pursue those ones that fit my strategy.
Yeah, because it's really tough when you're a small business and you offer a product or service for a certain amount of money, and you don't. Someone comes along and wants it. You didn't have to do anything to get them. Maybe they just find your website. And, you know, you look into what they're doing, and they kind of look like your ideal customer, but not really. It's really hard to turn that down.
It is. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to believe in what the ultimate goal will be, that you will be highly more profitable and more successful if you stay focused on your ideal opportunities. You'll get tempted, you know, because there'll be a slow period or you'll go through some sort of growth pain that, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and bring these guys in. I need this little bit of revenue this quarter or whatever happens to be the case. But ultimately, it will not pay off for you on the longer term.
Well, someone told me that 10% of your customers create 90% of your problems.
Sure. Or the other way you can look at it is the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of your customers generate 80% of your revenue or profitability.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. Yeah, so the idea, I was working with someone not too long ago who sells a product throughout the United States, and she started getting inquiries from overseas and was very excited because these people had, you know, their credit cards were at the ready, and naturally my client had all the boxes and she was ready to ship everything. But then she discovered that there were all these shipping regulations and border regulations for what she was selling, and it ended up eating up so much of her time that she wasn't able to service existing customers, and the business kind of had to pull back from that. Is that kind of an example of one of the many, I'm sure, of what you're talking about?
That's a great example, Donna. That's exactly what happens. You know, super excitement, I'm going to do it. I think there's a really strong point that you made in there, is then what happens to your existing customers?
Right? Yeah.
Their experience with you begins to erode, and then what happens if you start losing them?
So the key here then is to, as you said, know what you're good at and pursue those opportunities only, and have the discipline to turn down the ones that look great up front, but you've got maybe sometimes have that little gnawing feeling in your stomach that, oh my goodness, how am I going to do this?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you can go through the list of what I call it, the quote, say no to, say no to bad prospects, prospects outside your competency or philosophy. Mm-hmm. Say no to discounts,
That's another big one. I remember when a certain large book retailer started offering free shipping, and they almost went belly up because of it. But for the longest time, they were offering free shipping, then everybody on the Internet thought they had to offer free shipping in order to compete.
Right, absolutely.
And I guess you can't, if you're the chief cook and bottle washer and you don't have, investors or whatever, it's kind of hard to do that. So that's a really good point too, is being able to have your processes and your practices and policies set up, so to speak, and stick with them no matter, even if someone comes along and it means that they end up choosing another company instead of you.
Exactly right. I mean, it's very tough. Very difficult, but it will ultimately be the best course.
Hmm. Okay, that's a really great. So pursue what you're good at. Pursue the ideal opportunities only. Number two, you said, is once you've decided what those things are that you're good at, is to structure your firm around the strategy that you make to deal with what you're good at.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, essentially every aspect of, of the firm, from what we call the client experience, hiring, training, and operations, have to be organized and targeted effectively and profitably, capitalize on ideal opportunities that your firm's pursuing. The best managed firms consistently align their decision making around their strategy. So, again, I think going back to the example you were using with the individual that was looking at overseas, well, if overseas wasn't never, if you thought about your business plan, your strategy was, we're going to focus on the U.S., we are not going to be focused on the overseas market, your strategic plan clearly says that, then you build your practices and your policies and everything around that particular strategy, and you wouldn't end up taking that opportunity or even looking at it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make sure you're aligning all your decision making and your hiring and everything that you're doing is around your strategy.
Align your decision making around that strategy. So for web-based businesses, which most lifestyle CEO listeners are, that can mean putting up some very clear policies, like you're on your policy page or your About Us page, that lets people know, here's what we do, and this is what we do. So when they email you or call you and you explain to them that you don't do that, then it's not a big surprise and it doesn't take a whole lot of time out of your day.
Exactly. I mean, that's another great point. If you end up not sort of doing the screening and having the ability to screen customers or potential prospects on the front end, you end up spending a lot of your time speaking with them, and you ultimately realize they're not a good fit. So now you burn, let's just say you've taken half a day figuring that out, when you could have been working on the more ideal clients or actually working with your existing clients and making sure they're having a great experience. So, again, that's a really good point, that you don't, you find yourself burning up tons and tons of time when you're pursuing non, prospects that don't fit your model.
Right. You know, and something just occurred to me, too. Is this pretty much for small businesses? This is a fluid kind of thing, too, because if your business is growing and you are very strong, very small, do you find that as you grow, even incrementally, you have to kind of take a look at these decision-making strategies on a regular basis to make sure that you, if you in fact can accommodate these new kinds of clients or customers, that your business is set up to actually do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You need to revisit your plan on an annual basis. So the way I think about it is we put together a 5-year plan.
Okay.
And you want to have stretch goals in there. You know, you want to be, you know, the top 10% in your region or whatever happens to be the case. You know, these aren't hard, fast targets, but they're goals that make you stretch and make you be excellent. And each year you come back and you revisit your plan and say, am I on target? If I'm not, what do I need to do to adjust? Is my strategy, is my thinking still clear? If not, what do I need? And again, that's where you can tap into the folks that have had this experience that are the seniors that say, hey, you know, I want to get a half a day with one of these individual, and we'll sit down, let's go through my strategy once a year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, and so it's kind of like sitting down with someone like that, it's kind of like, you've heard of SCORE, right? The Service Corps of Retired Executives. It's kind of like a SCORE person all to yourself for a certain amount of time. It can really kind of help you. And does your firm do that as well?
Well, we do it on behalf of individuals and their families and other institutions, but basically helping them with their financial strategy, if you will, for how they're going to take care of themselves and their family over the course of their life.
And so part of what you're describing is how your firm has used these 4 approaches to profitability to grow.
And it's really for our firm. The strategies I've outlined here, are these, the prongs I've outlined, are really how do we think about our firm, Sandhill Advisors.
This is really great. So pursuing ideal business opportunities and then structuring your business around those opportunities are the first 2-prong approaches to profitability that Jim's sharing with us. And we're going to take our next break and come back in a minute or so, and he's going to share the last 3. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to one of the greatest Lifestyle CEO shows I've done, I think. We have got Jim McCaffrey on the phone. Of course, I think all the shows are great, but this one is especially great because Jim is sharing with us his 4-prong approach to profitability. And this is, I work with businesses across all different kinds of sectors, service providers, product manufacturers and sellers, and this 4-prong approach is shaping up to be something that anyone can use. So I suggest if you're just tuning into the show that you make sure you go back and listen to the archives at our website, and also get out your pen and paper and start taking some notes because Jim's sharing some great information. And for those of you listening live, you can call your question in to Jim at 800-773-0355. Okay, Jim, back to your 4-prong approach. Number 1 was pursuing ideal opportunities only. Number 2 was structuring your firm around those opportunities. And what's number 3, Jim?
Institutionalize your business processes. So,
big one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And really what it is, it's about sort of having each one of your customers, your clients, having a very consistent experience. And one of the things that I've seen in a lot of small businesses that I mentioned is that the way they do things in many areas varies every single time, and that is the path of destruction over time. You've got to get the variability out of things that are routine. And I'll just apply it to our own model. When we open accounts for our clients, we want that to be an automated, seamless experience for the clients. That just, you know, they don't even know that it's happened. It's been so smooth. But if you're doing it on a manual basis and someone different's doing it each and every time, then that can break down. And you know, the account didn't get open, the funds didn't get into the account, the client's wondering where their money is. I mean, all those things end up having to be a really bad experience for the client. So you want to take routine, processes and make those as automated and as transparent as you possibly can. And a lot of it's going to involve technology and automation, but you've got to get out of doing manual routines that are end up with inconsistent experiences for your customers.
And thank God for that technology and automation. Haven't you found that it has become more and more affordable every year, even for small businesses to take advantage of even some of the most sophisticated technology that can help automate their processes?
Absolutely.
I mean, from a basic thing like a shopping cart to even credit card processing, I mean, it's just become so available to everyone.
Right, absolutely, and it's going to continue that way.
Oh, good. We all like the sound of that. The prices keep coming down. We like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, number four you say here is delegating to maximize effectiveness.
Absolutely. Again, I see that in the small businesses, and this was an example of our firm, too, is that the CEO, who happens to be fantastic at doing business development, was also running the business, and that's something she didn't necessarily like nor was great at. So at some point, you have to make a decision that, hey, I need to do what I'm really good at to help grow the business and stay away from the things that I'm not. And that really means, you know, delegating to the extent you can do it internally or hiring professional management, which was the case with Santo Advisors hiring myself.
So
it's sort of stepping back and saying, as I mentioned in the very beginning of the show, that as you begin to grow, for some point you can do that. You can be all things to all people within the firm. But at some point you're going to have to step back and say, hey, if I'm going to go take the firm to the next level, I'm going to have to get professional management. I'm going to have to get out of the things that I'm not great at that I just happened to have been doing for the last however many years and really focus on where I add the most value to the firm.
Let somebody else do the other things.
Absolutely.
Hey, Jim, we've got a call from Rich in New York. Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had seen something that Jim had written. It had to do with how to generate referrals for your business, and I wondered if you could ask him to address that subject.
Jim, did you hear that question?
I did hear that. Thanks, Rich. Should I go ahead and on that?
Yes, please.
Okay. One of the things that's key for us, and again, I'm going to focus it from our firm's perspective, is that the way we grow, we don't do a lot of what I call, you know, heavy advertising and promotion externally. We really look to provide outstanding service to our clients who then refer us to other opportunities. And so we do that in a number of ways. One, within our own client base, and that really comes from a consistent, all the things I'm talking about, consistent experience for the client. They're satisfied. Investment performance is strong. And then you simply ask them, do you believe we're referable? And they will hopefully say yes, and you'll get referrals that way. We also focus on what we call centers of influence. That can be, you know, CPAs, attorneys. In particular, in our case, we do a lot of divorcees, if you will. So we focus on divorce attorneys. We do round tables, talk about estate planning and so on. So you've got centers of influence then who can help refer prospects to you. And again, going back to pursuing ideal opportunities only, when you're working with centers of influence, it's critically important that you communicate to them what is your ideal and profile client so that they know that they're not sending you referrals that don't fit your model.
So that's really good. Let's talk about that for just a little bit. I'm going to give you an example of something that I've experienced before, and tell me if this is what you're talking about. I worked for a short period of time, in a very, very small law firm where the partner there, basically almost all he did was set up business structures for companies. So he would incorporate you or set up your LLC or whatever. Sure. And he had strong relationships with accountants in the area. And it seemed like, and as I was watching him do this, it seemed like, you know, he was always going to networking groups that accountants were at.
Absolutely.
And so, not necessarily other attorneys, but he would always be asking me to set up files for him for these new businesses he was going to incorporate, and they were all referred by accountants. So is that what, like for him, for his business, a center of influence is the accountant profession. Is that kind of what you mean?
Absolutely. That's dead on, Donna.
Okay, okay.
And that's exactly what we're doing when we're focusing in on sort of the estate planners, the attorneys that do estate planning. They're going to have clients that are going to need wealth management services.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully when we've communicated what we're experts at and what we do, and that they end up saying, okay, when the client A comes in and needs estate work and planning and financial management, they get, the first thing that comes to their mind is, hey, you need to go see Sandhill Advisors as soon as we get done.
Oh, yes. Okay, everyone hear that, right? That's good. That's a good. Let me ask you another example. Okay, we gave an example of some service providers. For manufacturers, let's talk about that for a second, because a lot of listeners to this show manufacture products or services, specifically bath and body care products. So let's just say a center of influence could be, for those kinds of manufacturers, people that teach work-life balance seminars, for example, or maybe like yoga instructors.
Sure. I thought massage, but yeah, exactly.
Massage, yeah. Okay, so that's, so you're talking about developing a group of relationships with a core group of not necessarily people, but a core group of types of people that can refer to you their customers or the people that they have influence with to you, because you don't compete with your circle of influence.
That's exactly right. You complement it.
Okay. All right. So again, this is something that everyone can use, and of course, you're talking about good old word of mouth too, and that is do a great job. And what's the best form of advertising in the world is having someone say something good about you to their friend.
Satisfied and happy clients will always work best.
Okay, so that's really good. So maybe I guess maximizing you know, your successes could be almost like you know, sort of another approach or another strategy to take to getting the profitability is when you have a good customer experience and somebody says great job, or they send you an email and say how happy they are, figure out a way to maximize that so you can tell people about it. Maybe a newsletter or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, or just, you know, you can put their quotes in your newsletter or somehow,
or at your website or something.
Yeah, or your collateral or your literature. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, I keep coming back to it, is that, you know, your clients that you have, you sustain focused on making sure they have an outstanding experience will definitely lead to improved profitability over time and the opportunity to grow. I mean, I can't underestimate that.
Okay. Well, we're going to take our final break, Jim, and when we come back, we've talked about your four-prong approach to profitability, which was fabulous. When we come back, we're going to talk about just a few of the things that need to be in place as you approach this four-prong strategy.
Sure.
This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we'll be right back for our final segment.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the final segment of a fantastic Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm here with Jim McCaffrey, and he's been sharing with us his four-prong approach to profitability for any business. We've got just about 10 more minutes left on today's show, so if you have a question about some of Jim's suggestions, you can call your question or comment into him toll-free at 800-773-0355. Jim, we talked about pursuing your ideal opportunities and structuring your business strategy around that, institutionalizing your business processes, and delegating to maximize effectiveness. Now, those are four great strategies, and there are some things that you said I think need to be in place as you are approaching those four strategies. Can you share with us what those are?
Right, absolutely. One of the things that I think is absolutely critically important as just a beginning point, these four prongs are sort of the tactical elements of a bigger philosophical position that you have, and what that is, it's your statement, your mission statement, your vision, and strategy. And by mission, it's, you ask yourself, why do I exist? Why does my business exist? And you answer that question. That's your mission. And then your vision is, what do I want to be? What do we want to be known as? What do we, you know, is the premier provider of what? And then your strategy in subtext is, what's your game plan then? So what's the game plan to then, you know, pursue your vision? And you, and these become, you know, nothing more than really crisp three-sentence, two-sentence statements that, you know, you can play back to your neighbor, and they get it. And from there, you begin then to build your firm. And then the tactical aspects that fall out are the things that I just mentioned to you, that we've talked about in the four prongs.
And that's a really good way to look at it. It's like, go back and define your philosophical overlay first,
right,
and then you can actually implement the tangible things, which is the four-prong approach.
Exactly.
So do you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it sounds easier than it actually is coming up with those two or three sentences. We spent probably a better part of, you know, almost 2 months in our firm working through those particular paragraphs, if you will, or the
sentences
for each one. And it's very, very difficult work. But once you have it and people align themselves around it, it's extremely powerful.
So you had a lot of minds coming to the table at your firm to define these three things, I guess.
Absolutely. We spent a tremendous amount of time on this. And this is the heavy lifting, if you will. And then once you've got that, then everything else, you know, it's just built around that. You know, you've got your sort of true north, if you will, and then what you're doing then is you're just building your firm around that, and you're doing all the things by pursuing the ideal opportunities because it's consistent with what your mission, vision, and strategy is. You know, you're structuring your firm around it, you're institutionalizing your business processes, and you've got effective delegation model. So, again, it just keeps you really focused, and it builds alignment within the firm, which is critically important.
So let's say you are the chief cook and bottle washer, and you need to kind of step back and define your mission, your vision, and your strategy. Do you find that many small businesses struggle with maybe all three of those to some extent, but actually strategizing once they have the mission and vision, okay, now what do I do?
Well, you know, I think they struggle definitely sort of defining themselves, and again, that and being able to do it in one or two sentences. That's the hard part. Because, you know, you're kind of, you evolved out of doing, you know, maybe it was a part-time thing you did for a while. Now you're doing it full-time. Now you're doing it 5 days a week. All of a sudden you have a business going. You're going, well, okay, well, sort of I've evolved to this. You need to kind of go back and say, okay, I need to really understand what I'm all about. Why do I exist here today? What do I want to be? And what is my game plan? Because what eventually happens is, again, you start to grow, as we talked about in the very beginning of the show, and at some point, profitability is eroding, and now what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
If you start in the beginning and you clearly define mission, vision, and strategy and stay focused, you can get yourself over those humps because you always know what you're all about, what you're trying to do, and what your game plan is.
And you can probably get over them really fast without wasting a whole lot of time.
Exactly. Many firms that I've come into to help have gotten themselves, you know, many, many years down the road, and then trying to work through mission, vision, and strategy can take months because, you know, there's so much sort of water under the bridge, if you will, that now you're really talking about really changing course and getting people to think differently about themselves.
Right. So this is a really good conversation for not just businesses that have been around for a while, but probably even more so for businesses that are just now getting off the ground, because it's hard to see into the future and see the water under the bridge. You know, of course, once it's under the bridge, it's even harder to deal with it, but what you're talking about is putting the platform and the foundation in place first so that hopefully, well, there's always some water under the bridge, but there's as little as possible to mop up.
Exactly. Or, you know, the other analogy is you can't put the roof on until you got the foundation, right? I mean, it's just, you know, everybody kind of wants to get to the end first, and you've really got to do that fundamental stuff in the beginning. It just makes life so much easier. You know, you kind of say, oh, this is, you know, too touchy-feely stuff. I don't really want to do it. I just want to go out and sell stuff. Well, you know, it's really important to have that stuff in the front because it really makes life easier over the longer haul. Because you can always come back to it. It's something you can always latch on to. I understand what I'm here to do. I know what I want to be, and I got a game plan.
Well, that's really great. Now, your firm offers some roundtables in your part of California that are sometimes open to the public. Can you tell me about some of the ones that are coming up, Jim?
Well, we're doing two. We don't have dates set right now. One of them is going to be Women in Philanthropy. In our area, philanthropy is a very big deal. We're in Palo Alto, California, and our women clients are very, very interested in that and that topic and understanding more about that.
And so, is that a roundtable discussion of how women either women who are in business or are not in business can use philanthropy as an investment strategy or business growth strategy?
Well, you know, and dealing with wealth. So do you want to set up a donor advised fund? You know, what philanthropic things are you interested in? How do I go about doing that? So we'll have experts in that have a discussion, then you have a Q&A, and then typically, you know, we'll do some sort of hors d'oeuvre thing, and then people can have an opportunity to, you know, mingle around and network with other individuals that look and act similar to themselves.
And would that maybe be of interest to someone who's thinking about setting up their own nonprofit organization?
Absolutely.
Okay, so a lot of businesses, you know, kind of as another business approach, or I'm sure you've noticed this, are setting up nonprofit foundations as a sort of a side to their, maybe it's not the side, but some sort of nonprofit that's related to their for-profit entity in some way to give back, so to speak.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then the second we'll be doing is a seminar or discussion on the psychology of money, which we find to be quite interesting, that, you know, just how people think about it, and everybody thinks about it differently.
That sounds like the name of a book. What is that one going to be about?
But we don't have that one on the agenda. Or, I mean, we don't have dates set for either of these, but we're just pursuing that through our planning process right now.
So is this in part, like the psychology of money, a discussion in part at least about how people are raised to think about money and how over a period of time they sort of develop their own mindset where money is concerned?
Bet, absolutely.
Wow, and I guess if you're in business, you have to sort of explore that in order to know what to do with the money that you are making.
Exactly.
It's interesting to think about that. I'm I read financial columns in a couple of different papers every now and then, and a lot of times, you know, they focus on that kind of psychology of what people are doing with their money, and it's fascinating to see how we are raised and how that fits into how we handle our finances as adults and as business people.
Absolutely. If you're quite interested in our business, you know, it's more of how the heirs think about it. So you've got the first generation of the wealth maker, and then you've got second generation and third, and
mm-hmm.
that whole psychology through that those generational elements. It's quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah, I bet it is. I guess maybe in some instances you deal with the heirs whose psychology is let's spend it.
And you see a lot of that.
So it's
quite fascinating.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim. I want you guys to know that you can go to Sand Hill Advisors website at SHADV. That's kind of a short for Sand Hill Advisors, SHADV.com, where once these roundtables are scheduled, there will be information posted there about what they're all about and the dates and times and everything. And you guys, if you're interested in meeting me, I want you to know that I'm going to be in New York City this weekend. I'm going to be at the Open Center in New York City with none other than Lisa Price of Carol's Daughter, and we're going to be doing a workshop together where Lisa's going to be sharing some of her passion to profit success story, and I'm going to be sharing some of my ideas and my passion principles and my view it, then do it philosophy and how you can put all these things together to light a fire under your business. We're going to be at the Open Center at 83 Spring Street in New York City. That's on April 23rd, 2006. For more information and to register, you can go to opencenter.org. And you'll see there a link to our workshop, and you can also give them a call at 212-219-2527. We've also got some interesting things at the Lifestyle CEO website. We, of course, have a link to all of our radio shows there, so you can go there and enjoy the show on your own time, on your own schedule. And also, our blog is taking flight. We're doing a book club blog where you can chat with me about your ideas, and this month's book is Rich Dads Before You Quit Your Job by Robert T. Kiyosaki. It's a great book for small business owners to get their businesses started off on the right foot and moving forward to success. We've also got some great shows coming up on the Lifestyle CEO Show over the next couple of weeks. Next week on April 24th, Laurel Delaney will be here to talk about how you can take your small business global. And then the following week, on May the 1st, we've got one of my favorite people in the whole world, Kathy Townsend, a really great business coach who's going to talk to us about how we can use a coaching program to help us grow our businesses. And we've got a whole bunch of shows set up for May, too, and I hope you'll stay tuned. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'll see you next week when we're going to be talking about going global. In the meantime, break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. See you next week, guys.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.